Five, four, three, two, one.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Coming to you from the City of Angels, I am Jason Barrett, and you have found the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. We're up to episode number 6 of season 2. My thanks to each of you for continuing to support the cause by listening, retweeting, and sharing the content, as well as visiting the website, sportsradiopd.com. If I could get you to take one extra step and leave a review on iTunes, that would help me out a great deal. As I mentioned on the last episode, due to travel and work projects, there won't be a 5-5 on this show. We're going to dedicate the time instead to the weekly conversation. And this week's chat is one you're going to have a few opinions on, because my guest is Jay Mariotti. To some of you, when you think of Jay, you may think of his run with Around the Horn on ESPN or his excellent columns in Chicago for the Sun-Times. To others, the first impression will be the guy who had a domestic issue with his former girlfriend, which was reported on Deadspin. Now look, I don't claim to be Columbo. I wasn't present for what took place between Jay and his ex, but neither were you. I've learned over time that there are always three sides to every story. Yours, mine, and the truth. What that truth is, only a select few will really know. And I'm not doing this episode today to tell you how to think of Jay. You can enjoy him, hate him, or feel indifferent about him. That's your prerogative. But what I do hope to accomplish is giving you a first account listen to someone who at one point was a heavyweight in our business, and then you can decide from there where you lie. On that note, let's not waste any time. Here's my in-depth discussion with Jay Mariotti.
3, 2, 1.
The last time I checked, Jay Mariotti didn't kneel during the national anthem like Colin Kaepernick. He didn't inject steroids like Jose Canseco. But yet, Jay, you've been lumped in the same category with Ray Rice, whether that's fair or not. You feel it's led to a case of essentially being blackballed by some in the media business.
First, I need to say, Jason, that, you know, I have worked over the last several years. I was the sports editor and a columnist in San Francisco for a couple of years. I tried a multimedia operation in Florida for a couple of years. So it's not as if there is a full-blown blackball such as Ray Rice. But in my case, we're talking about 2010 now. In a case that was expunged and dismissed several years ago, a case in which I never acknowledged guilt because it was never asked of me by the courts, a case in which I was told it would be expunged, a case in which the accuser went to a civil court and lost because we finally were able to present our discoveries and witnesses and evidence that we were not allowed to in the original case. There are so many different variables when it comes to Ray Rice, Ezekiel Elliott, other cases, and I think the media, and I'm going to get after the media here a little, make the mistake of assuming each and every case is the same. There is so much gray area in these cases. I don't believe that a judge would have told me your case will be expunged. Jason, you can't go out and snap your fingers and get an expungement. The New York Times did a piece on expungements, how very difficult they are to come by. And so anybody out there who just does a cursory look at my case on the internet, sees some of these crappy websites cover it, sees even mainstream sites cover it and do it in two or three paragraphs, they're not getting the realistic picture at all. I did not participate in those crimes as accused. My record has been clean, as always, for a long time now, and I don't think I really need to prove this to anybody. What I wish that people in the media would do, whether it's employers or columnists or writers at newspapers or websites, is to do your homework. Maybe give me or my attorney a call. Don't be so overzealous in trying to nail. I have been very successful in the media. It's what I felt quite often. Some of these people writing about me and talking about me never picked up the phone and gave me a call. And I kind of understand, Jason, why people, athletes, coaches, sports teams, just in general in this day and age, don't trust or like the media. Valuable lesson for me. I'm a hard-hitting columnist. Certainly, I've had my fair share of commentary about athletes who get into trouble. But I think what I learned from this is to be very careful before you step forward. Make sure you hear all sides of it. Make sure you do your due diligence. You corroborate. You don't assume. And worst of all, in my case, allegations were treated as facts. These were mere allegations, lies, falsehoods. And in the end, my record is clean. So what should that tell people? Furthermore, I don't believe that anybody out there followed up. I have not seen one word, Mariotti wins civil case. Isn't that pretty important in all of this? But I think the fact that I won is not generally what the media wanted in my case, especially the sports media, a small collection of people, a handful of people with power who run and operate the sports media, just wanted to assume, oh, this guy committed these crimes and he's guilty and we're going to rub him out of the business.
Why would they not want you to win? Why would they not want to tell that
story? Well, I think, it's a cannibalistic business, Jason, especially with the Deadspins of the world, these places with writers who aren't trained. They're trying to get traffic. That was the mission when the internet took hold, and suddenly we see this avalanche of websites. Get traffic, get traffic, get traffic. Well, who better to seek out for traffic than people at ESPN who are doing television shows for years and are some of the most well-known personalities in sports media? And I certainly have been one of them for a long time. And when you do a show on ESPN for 8 years around the horn, we had huge ratings, and I've done talk shows, and certainly I've been a columnist for 3 decades in this country. You are a target, and I became a target. Why is it that people wanted to only believe one side of the story? I think it's a highly competitive, highly desperate industry right now. It was a chance to try to rub somebody out and at the same time get traffic. Maybe it was a chance for some people to feel good about their own skeletons in their closets. I don't know. I'm not in their heads, but it's reached the point now where I don't care, because this case is so far in my past and isn't even on a record anymore, that I've just moved on and tried some other things in media, and I'm doing a podcast now that I love. But I can't control what people think. I can tell you that there were cases in the past at ESPN where and at other places where I've worked where maybe we've clashed about a few things. I think that is the case for any number of talented sports talk show hosts and columnists out there. Sometimes you're not always on the same page, but for the most part, I've worked for very good people. I had a wonderful relationship with Eric Rideholm and Aaron Solomon at Around the Horn, and various newspaper editors I've had through the years. So I can't sit there and tell you, well, geez, I've had nothing but poor experiences. But the poor experiences I have had with bosses, well, that might compel them to maybe think, aha, we finally got the guy.
You mentioned that you worked for the San Francisco Examiner after all this. So, yes, there have been opportunities, but they haven't been the big opportunities that, based on your career track record, you should be able to land. So do you feel that there's anyone out there, or that companies are putting out a message saying, hey, don't touch this guy?
I think there are people at ESPN have put the word out to I'll give you an example. I'm a blunt guy. You're asking me questions, I'm going to answer them. But there was a station in San Francisco I was speaking to, and my rep says, hey, you know, they're not even going to let you in the door because it's Entercom. And I said, well, explain to me why Entercom wouldn't let me in the door. And his answer was, well, they're pretty tight with ESPN people. And I'm thinking, wow. It did not end right with ESPN. I felt that when the case came up originally, they rubbed me right out of the show immediately, right off Around the Horn. And the following Monday, you've got commentators at the end, my very colleagues, who are criticizing me at the end. And certainly I'm open to criticism. But hey, this case, somebody had even heard my side of it yet. It was fresh in the news. And already they seem to be assuming guilt on Around the Horn, my very show. And I think that came from on high. That's what I was told by one of the panelists. And thinking, wow, somebody really must have it out for me there. And I'll tell you a couple of stories about ESPN and my relationship with them. And I did a show in Chicago on the radio. It was very successful. My partner ended up being Mark Silverman, who's having a terrific career. But I was taken out to lunch by Len Weiner, who was the program director, and he hands me a document. And he says, Jay, you need to sign here. And I look down at it, and it says, you are not to criticize the White Sox or the Bulls, the two teams they were trying to keep in terms of rights in the future. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not going to sign away my ethics here. I do a national show on television on ESPN. I'm a columnist at a major newspaper, and you want me to sign this sheet of paper that says I'm not going to criticize the Chicago Bulls and the Chicago White Sox? And I said, no, thank you. And I left Arby's where we had a meeting. And that was that. And the day after Christmas, I'm told to come in at 8 a.m. on December the 26th. And I'm told by Jim Pastor and Len Weiner that you are no longer employed here because I didn't sign those documents. And I fought it, and little did I know that they would attempt to claim I had bad ratings. Well, I got a call from a birdie who said that, Jay, you're going to have great ratings. Hold your ground. Sure enough, it was something like a 4-5, 4-6 in a midday slot against the Score, which is the provincial Chicago hometown sports station. And I had some escalators in my contract, and they weren't going to pay them. And I had to call Bruce Gilbert at the time. Bruce was the chief at ESPN Radio at the time, and Bruce finally called back and said that we're going to do right by you and pay you. Well, of course you are, or else you have a lawsuit rammed up your ass. And that's sort of the background. Now, you might say, and you're a programmer, you might say, Jay, you should let it go. Why would I leave tens of thousands of dollars on the table? Why would I allow a radio station to do a deal, evidently with Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of those teams, where I'm going to sign my ethics away? I was stonewalled at ESPN Radio for quite a while after that, until 2010 when I'm out here in L.A. working, and finally all the ESPN chiefs come out and they huddle with me in a big meeting. They want to hire me in L.A. Jalen Rose and I had done really cool shows that summer, but I'm getting the grilling on what happened in Chicago, and I'm telling them what happened, and they didn't seem to want to hear it. Now, this is Mo Davenport. These are big shots at ESPN. And they're grilling me, and they're kind of lecturing me. I'm thinking, guys, do you realize I've been on a show for 8 years, and this is abominable what you're asking me to do? And nobody seemed to get it there. And then this case happens, and they wipe their hands of me. And later I talked to Tim McCarthy, and Tim said, hey, Jay, there were a lot of people there who couldn't wait for you to fail. And I'm thinking, why? Because of this Chicago thing that I fought years ago? So you asked me a question. I'm giving you the answer. This is often how the business works. It's kind of slimy. And then if a radio host decides I'm going to stand up for my ethics and my money that I'm owed, then you are penciled off as a bad guy. No, I'm just standing up for my rights. If there was at ESPN some problems in their boardrooms with me, that's somebody like a Jim Pastor who grew to prominence there raising his hand and saying, I don't like the guy. Why? Not because I didn't do a good job, it's because they wanted me out of there because of Jerry Reinsdorf. These are the sort of things I have been battling for years. Chicago, a very dirty, corrupt market. I lasted there 17 years, but I felt like a kamikaze pilot. Most days I would wake up and say, what is going to happen today? Is Ozzie Guillen going to call me a name? It was a deliberate attempt to try to run my ass out of town. I lasted 17 years. I decided to resign on my own because their digital site at the Sun-Times was not up to snuff. To this day, it's not up to snuff. They were sold a couple of weeks ago for $1, that newspaper, to an alderman. God bless them. And I carry on here with a great life in L.A. So, I mean, Jason, I've had a wonderful career. I'm not complaining. Just trying to educate people about the backstory of what goes down. And it's not as simple as, wow, Mariotti, worst human being who ever lived. No, I'm a cool human being. The problem is some of the people I've worked for have tried to rub me out of the business, absolutely.
All right, so there's a number of things there that I'm going to get to as we go through our conversation. But look, all of these guys that are making decisions on hiring people, the first thing they're going to do when they're looking at someone is Google the name. And as soon as they do, it's going to come up with what you just alluded to, the incident that took place in August of 2010. You may have been cleared, but most of these PDs and higher-ups are not going to dig through the court files and look through 15 different links to figure it out. They're going to probably click the Deadspin article or another one, and they're going to form an opinion off of one or two things because, let's be honest, not everyone researches the right way. So What exactly happened that night that you can share?
Well, first of all, I've been very transparent. I wrote an entire book in detail about this episode back in 2011. It's called The System. It's on Amazon. It's out there. So it's not as if I'm running away from it. In fact, I've been very forthright, Jason, and wanting everybody to know what happens in these cases behind the scenes. I often talk about it on the podcast with the Elliott case and various things that come up. I think I'm very qualified to talk about these things. And I also have done a couple of podcasts with Whitlock when he was doing Fox Sports podcasts, and I've done various interviews. So I just want you to know and everybody know, I'd be glad to talk about it. It is 7 years old. It has been expunged. It's off my record because nothing happened. What I was dealing with was an abusive person who, at one point before this night you referred to, you know, was very abusive. 17 times I got punched, 17 in the chest. And I didn't know what to do. For the first time in my life, I'm trapped. I had never dealt with this before, ever. And I didn't know what to do because you're sitting in a hotel room and you're wondering, do I call the front desk? Well, you can't do that because it's going to get out in the media. Do I call the police? No, you can't do that. Do I call my bosses at AOL and ESPN? Well, you can't do that because they're not going to believe you. They're going to think, oh, he's in a situation here and he must be partially to blame or all to blame. You can't win. I felt like I was trapped. And I think this is important for everybody to hear. Anybody who has been a victim of this, male or female, what I'm saying here is very important. I'm guessing that a lot more people go through these sort of things than anybody ever wants to admit. And I'm here to tell you, I've been through it and I've been abused. I had an attorney once who told me, why would you ever admit that? You're going to be Chuck Finley admitting that Tawny Katayan hit him. And I said, I have to be honest. I'm a reporter. And I did tell that story, and I'm telling you today. So I was dealing with somebody who's very abusive and had personal issues. My mistake was trying to help somebody. I think most people, most of my friends and family would tell me, now, why didn't you run for the hills? Because I made a mistake in thinking, I'm going to help. I care about this person. I'm going to help. It exploded on me on that particular night when, again, there was an argument, and again, I was abused, and there was a third party in a car watching us argue, and she's trying to run toward the ocean in a bad part of L.A., Venice Beach, and I'm trying to stop her by holding my hand on there. Somebody saw this and assumed that this guy here is doing this to this woman. Well, that is not what I was doing at all. I was trying to help her, but the minute a third-party witness goes ahead and calls the police are going to arrest the guy. And they did. And from that point on, it was a living nightmare because she ended up hiring a prominent attorney. And from that point on, it seemed to be a money grab. And the case was thrown out by the district attorney, so it looked like I was going back to work. Then 4 weeks later, a city attorney picked it up, but then reduced it down to a low-level misdemeanor. And my bosses at AOL are saying, what is going on? I said, I have no idea, but this is a roller coaster nightmare, and I can't read the judicial system here. It seems crooked to me. And in the end, we have a decision to make. Do we take this to trial and win and spend, oh, I don't know, for the attorney I had, $600,000-$800,000? Or do you take this low-level misdemeanor, which was the equivalent of touching on a shoulder, which I did not do, but I said, I'm going to go ahead and move forward with this because I want to go resume my career. AOL was telling me, you're coming back to work on Monday, get your column ready. And I decided to do that. Well, AOL pulled a fast one, decided it could save a lot of money, and the next day called me and said, you're out. ESPN said, you're out. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, as if waiting for this ball to drop, that's what happened. And it was tough pill to swallow because I didn't understand the previous 5 weeks at all. It was a yo-yo. And now in the end, I'm out of two jobs. And I don't really understand why, because this is a low-level misdemeanor that really had very little to do with the original charges. From that point on, it became more of a money grab, and then I'm being followed around at my favorite restaurants where I live. I still have a lease. I have to live here. I can't really move away. I just gotten out here. And she's starting to follow me around to these places. And in the end, And she finally, 6 months later, as I'm with some friends at a bar, here come the police, you're arrested. You continue to follow her around. And I'm like, I'm not following anybody around. But she was coached very well. Next thing you know, I have a civil suit slapped at me. But in the end, that is when we could gather all of our resources, our evidence, everything that was not allowed to be presented in the original case, we were allowed to in the civil case, and she lost. And that was that, and that's the end of it. Jason, I have lived a clean life. I have lived a clean life since. I've worked since. Anybody who wants to listen to me, you can hear me on the podcast every day. I'm the same guy. I'm loving life. I'm healthier than ever, happier than ever. But that case is something that I would never wish upon my worst enemy, and it could happen to anybody at any time if you are in the public eye. Hell, if you're not in the public eye, but in particular, if you're a public figure, that easily can happen to somebody. I think if I had any sort of pattern in the past of this, you could be deadspin and say, what a jerk. He did it. He did it. You don't have the evidence to say I did it. You don't have a Ray Rice video. You know, there was something shot where I'm trying to help the person. I'm in a upset state, as anybody would be there. But the way this has gone down in the profession is wrong and unfair. I am not that kind of a person. I have two wonderful daughters who never saw any of that remotely in the household growing up. And I'm appalled that people in the media simply think, we can dismiss him as this. It's just wrong.
Well, you know what happens. Everybody reads. Everybody forms opinions based on what they read. Prior to our chat, I talked to a number of different executives just to get their opinions. Hey, what do you think of Jay? What's your holdup? And the one thing that came back from a few people that I thought was worth sharing with you is that, and here you are, you're doing some of exactly what they're talking about. The consensus was they haven't seen you be apologetic, contrite, and taking steps to help your life and career. Yet you just pointed out all these things that they may not be privy to. It's hard to say be contrite if you were found not guilty and if you were being abused, as essentially you just laid out. So they're only looking at what they've read and see. When you hear that, though, how do you respond to that?
Hard for me to have respect for people like that because they're supposed to be journalists. Maybe they're simply businessmen who don't care. But I would think people who have risen to those positions might have a little bit of an idea of how to go out and corroborate a story. I think, Jason, it's more laziness and that. I don't want that headache, and I don't want advertisers dealing with this. I think it's more of that. Apologetic? I apologize for being in that position. I apologize for not having better judgment about human beings. I apologize for that situation. Absolutely. But what else am I supposed to apologize for when there's nothing on my record? What would they like me to apologize for? And I guess I would say is I'm not too sure I want to work for people like that if that's how shallow they are. I have worked for a couple of people since then. Their HR departments obviously looked at this and they cleared me to work. So I think it's probably, and I don't know what's written about me, but my flying guess is here, Jay Mariotti's a jerk because he never apologized for this. Well, who's writing this? Some 22-year-old at Deadspin who never took a journalism class in his life? I mean, that's what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with idiots being paid 5 cents an hour who are told to get traffic, go after Mariotti today. They don't make a phone call to me or my attorney. At least the publisher of the San Francisco Examiner did his homework. And I would think the people you spoke to might want to say, well, hell, he did work there. Maybe we should call the publisher of the Examiner and see how that went. To me, Jason, it's just too easy for them to do that. And now that I've criticized them, they'll say, well, see, he's a jerk. I would ask them to put themselves in my shoes and try to think how they would deal with somebody out there who doesn't know me, has never even spoken to me, just assuming, well, he did it and he's never apologized. How about picking up the phone and calling me? None of that. And I think, Jason, it's because largely ESPN Radio has been a major player and influencer in this industry, even with places like Entercom. And I think there are probably people that are saying, don't go near him. And there have been other things that have happened at ESPN with Scott Van Pelt and others. And I'm thinking, Jesus, there seems to be an onslaught up there to ruin me. A lot of it has to do with the John Walsh case that Salisbury and I went through. I mean, these are the sort of things I'm not even supposed to be talking about, but I don't care. I think we have to be open to our listeners and our readers and our viewers. If we expect to command credibility, we need to be honest about our own issues. And I've tried to be, and I'm doing it again. But if there are indeed people out there who think, wow, he's Ray Rice, well, damn it, you'd better go do your homework, pal, because that's an injustice to me.
I want to get into some of the Chicago stuff, but as someone who has made hiring decisions before for Entercom, I will tell you, though, I'm not going to dispute that ESPN has influence. They certainly do. But I can tell you, having worked for 4 years for Entercom and working with them a little bit now, that usually, when it comes down to hiring decisions, is usually done at a local level. Yes, you have to get corporate support. That's most companies. But I never once was ever told, hey, ESPN recommends this, so you should do that. Now, I'm not saying that they don't have certain situations like that come up. Maybe they do. I'm just telling you, based on my experience, I never went through that. And I've dealt with the CEO, the president of programming. So maybe somebody's using that as an excuse, put it on ESPN.
My deal with ESPN goes pretty deep. I mean, right. Not long after this, you know, Salisbury and I'm glad Sean's doing well now. I think he got screwed. This was at a bar where he's having some fun with people. I don't approve of that behavior, but it should have been a suspension, not a firing, and I'm glad he's doing well. But he and I are we're basically in an interview setting with our agents at the Beverly Wilshire, that's the Julia Roberts, Richard Gere, Pretty Woman Hotel. So mm-hmm. It was a fancy meeting. A producer wanted us to co-host a show, kind of a silly show, but we were talking to him. The agents were there. We had other people at the table. John Walsh, who's been a prominent executive, and this has all been written. I'm just trying to straighten the story out for people because it's written inaccurately by Deadspin, of course. He comes in. He's having a good time. Most of what he's doing doesn't bother me, but it does bother me when he comes over to our table and leaves his room number for one of the women sitting at the table right next to me. And I was appalled, considering the irony of what Salisbury and I had been through at ESPN, and here comes one of their policymakers coming through, not really too sure of where he is at that point of the night, and then handing his room number out to people on cards. I called Skipper the next day and said, I am appalled that you have double standards like this. You expect us to behave a certain way, and then your guy is doing this, and he apologizes. It's all out there. But the point of the matter was I let it go. I said, all right, it's done. And then about a year later, when my agent's making calls trying to get me work, one of the calls was to Bristol, and indeed they had me come up, and I spoke to everybody there, Davenport, their .com guy, pretty much everybody who mattered. But it wasn't really a serious thing. What Skipper was doing was giving me a one-off. Here, go do a piece on the Bus family. Well, the old man Jerry was dying at the time. That was tough. So Kobe Bryant gave me an interview. I wrote it, and it was a good piece and got a lot of comments, and none really about me, just about Kobe. And then I was told to scram, and I got the vibe, wow, this seems to be sort of a thank you, goodbye, thanks for not calling out Walsh. One thing led to another. I think the Salisbury party put it out there to Deadspin. They have a tape that I certainly didn't release. I don't tape people, but they had a video of somebody seeing Walsh bobbing along there at the restaurant, and that led to a big story from them. And then ESPN being very, very angry at me. And then GQ getting the story wrong and having to issue me a retraction, which doesn't happen often in GQ magazine. But the reason I'm bringing all of this up is it's a very reckless business. I can only imagine what people go through in the public eye if this is how shoddy and reckless people are. But yes, I believe that ESPN has a clear hard-on for me. Absolutely. And I would not put it past any of these people to tell others at other companies, stay away from them. Hell, at Fox, I subbed for Jay Moore on a couple of shows a couple of years ago. In fact, I asked beforehand, I said, is this just some something? Are you looking at me seriously? We're looking at you seriously. Okay. I do two sub shows. Everybody's happy. Again, Bruce Gilbert, good man. I like Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce is great.
Upfront. He is upfront with people. Calls me and said, Jay, I liked what you did. Got to be honest, this is a big company at Fox. I said, okay, can I go talk to that person? Let's just call it a day. I said, okay. Obviously, what is it? Is it calling up the internet and seeing this crap that the likes of Deadspin, they use their algorithms to push things to the top of your Google page. I mean, is that it? Is that this company that Gawker, that, you know, one of their sites was run out of business by Hulk Hogan, and the guy following me around for years, Delario, is now broke in Florida because Hulk Hogan bankrupted the guy? I mean, I wish, going back to your people you've spoken to, they would maybe look at, wow, the guy writing about Mariotti is AJ Delario. Wasn't he the Hulk Hogan guy? Yes, he was the Hulk Hogan guy, one of the worst journalists who ever lived, if you even call him that. And yet the people you speak to would rather believe that shit than give me a call, a guy who has won countless awards, who's been in the business since the 80s, who has had ratings and numbers everywhere he's been. Yeah, that was the avalanche I was dealing with. And if that's the way people are going to be in this business, Jason, then I'm not so sure I want to be in it anymore, because it doesn't seem to be a business with standards, the ones that I grew up with when I went to journalism school and the ones I had to follow as a columnist. I've never been sued because I know what libel law is. I know what slander law is. I know what the line is. I'm very thoughtful. I do my research. I'm grounded in facts. And what I'm reading today is largely not. And I'm not trying to sound like Trump. What I'm trying to tell you is there's much, much wrong with the media today, and maybe part of the problem, the very people running the media companies.
So you talked about some of the lengthy runs that you've had in the business, and one of them was Chicago, the Sun-Times. You were there for 17 years. I mean, you had a dominant hold on that market. You had access to Michael Jordan. People don't get access to MJ, but yet you did. Yet when you left in 08, you had your colleagues go after you. Roger Ebert wrote a piece that obviously took exception with your departure. You also said at that time you felt newspapers were dead. They haven't been rendered extinct yet, but they're certainly not profitable or as important as they once were either. I'm curious, as a guy who built his name and built a impressive resume in print, what your thoughts are on where the industry stands now from that standpoint.
Well, writing isn't dead, Jason. Writing is alive and doing pretty well on the internet, which is all I was claiming at the time. And really, I was fighting the same fight that Ebert was fighting at the time. Roger was doing digital at the time. And all I was telling the Sun-Times, they kept giving me three-year contracts. And yes, I was a guy who ruffled feathers in that town because so many people were afraid to go after power people in that town. I wasn't. It's a kind of a soft town. You might think Chicago is rough and tough. No. Most people are from there, parochial, and I stick out like a sore thumb because I dare to criticize Jerry Reinsdorf, the Cubs management at the time, or the Blackhawks management at the time. Some real bad owners, and I'm happy to see the Cubs and the Blackhawks change ownership, the people at the top, and win championships. I feel good about that. I think I affected change back then. But that is what was happening. I was doing this national show. I don't think many of my colleagues were that happy about it, but, you know, I'm just trying to beat the Tribune. I'm really a competitive guy who wants my team to win, and I think people who know me well will tell you I'm a real good teammate. It's just I've got my eye focused on the competition, and I felt that at the Sun-Times too many people were not. A lot of them maybe wanted to go work for the Tribune. They didn't want to be at the underdog paper. I was a convenient guy to go after. I thought a lot of that was unfair, too, because I resigned. It was my call just a couple of weeks after signing another three-year contract. But there was a caveat. I told them, guys, I'm going to go to Beijing to cover the Olympics. Are we going to get our website up and running to where I'm proud of it, where when Phelps breaks a record, you're going to post it immediately? Well, they didn't, Jason. One over there, we sent two against their 10, and my partner and I are sitting there waiting for things to be posted, and they just didn't care. The website was an abomination. So on the plane ride back, did a good job there. I resigned, publisher, peacefully. The Tribune got wind of it. I told them, yes, I'm leaving, and it's going to be hard to stick with this ship. It's going to be sinking if they don't get their digital operation moving. Well, they're kind of wounded at that point. It looks like their star is giving up on the paper, and I was. And sure enough, all hell broke loose, and that's fine. But to answer your question, newspapers are dead. I don't know why the New York Times would even have a print publication anymore, simply because they're doing well with digital. The Washington Post is doing well with digital. There will come a time you don't need that print operation, but that doesn't mean excellent investigative reporting and terrific commentary can't live digitally on traditional legacy newspaper sites. Those two sites are doing incredible stuff with Trump. It's the perfect time for digital journalism. So that's, again, that's, I think, something people misunderstood. Well, Mariotti's given up on newspapers. No, I'm giving up on the newsprint. I'm not giving up on the writing and the reporting that is now simply disseminated over the internet. And again, that was misunderstood, I think.
Talking about print, you see groups now like The Athletic investing in writers hoping to turn a profit by charging for content and eliminating advertising. Do you think that can be successful?
It's funny, when I left San Francisco, I spoke to the two guys running The Athletic four different times. Cool guys, forward-thinking. They're Silicon Valley guys. They're venture capitalists. They're young. As you know, being in San Francisco, the VC crowd is everywhere. I mean, here in L.A. where I live, it's celebrities. There, it's who are the VC people? Oh, there's Joe Lacob. So when we're having lunch, they're pointing out to me, oh, there's that guy over there. I said, who the hell's that? And that was fascinating to meet with them. This was 14, 15 months ago. And they were trying to sort out their dream. They just started in Chicago. And one thing I told them was, make sure you hire well-known names. I'm seeing a lot of these sites go on the cheap. Bleacher Report. Bleacher Report hires people nobody's ever heard of, calls them featured columnists, and then they aggregate stuff from other sites. You're not a featured columnist. You're a stringer off the street. But that's where Bleacher Report does the industry a disservice in trying to make stars out of people who don't know how to be stars. What I told these guys was, go out and hire the best. There are all sorts of great people chomping at the bit to get out of situations. And finally, they're doing that. And they hired Tim Kawakami, terrific Bay Area, very influential columnist, commentator, the perfect guy to run that. And that's what I'm talking about. They finally had apparently an insurgence of money enough to where they could go out and actually hire a Marcus Thompson, a Tim Kawakami. They need to keep doing that around the country. I like the pace they're at. I'm not sure, though, Jason, I'm going to be honest with you. Now we're going to veer back into Trump again. Trump is our sports now. When I'm doing a podcast every day, my vow to the listener is, I'm not doing Trump, but I'm going to do Trump as it pertains to sports. And sure enough, three or four topics a day are Trump as it pertains to sports. And I can't get away from it. And I have a feeling if sports journalism, sports media have a problem today, it is indeed Donald Trump and how to deal with pretty much people who used to be wrapped up in the Deflategate and who should be the quarterback and is this team going to win the division? Is this team going to cover? They're still out there, Jason, but they're not into it every day. The new sport is Donald Trump, and they're not devoting the same time and passion to sports arguments that they once were. And I think if I'm running a radio station or a sports section today, I'm frightened that we may never get those people back, because the country is in such turmoil politically that it occupies so many people every waking hour that sports seems more insignificant than I ever remember it. I think that's the bigger problem than who's going to buy a subscription. Yeah, The Athletic may put together a great network of sites, but if people are wrapped up in what's happening with the country, even if they're only charging, $3.82 for 6 months or whatever it is, are people really going to even care about what's happening with the San Francisco 49ers to even do that when they can get one of the Bay Area papers cheaper online?
You know, another distraction would be Twitter. It occupies everyone's time, especially if you love sports. You know that pretty well. You've gotten into a few spats with Scott Van Pelt over the years. Why do you guys have such an issue? What's that beef all about?
Well, I guess SportsCenter is near and dear to me. Fan of Patrick Olbermann. I felt that was a must-watch every night. And now that I'm not with ESPN anymore, just as when I wasn't with ESPN before around the horn, I feel that on occasion I can be critical. And by the way, that can include praise. I love Wright Thompson, the writer, best sports writer in America right now. Every time he comes out with a piece, I love it. I praise it. But it's funny how on Twitter, which I don't use that often anymore other than just to post our podcast. But one night last year, I'm watching SportsCenter and they're dancing or something, and I'm just not in the mood for this. I'm waiting for something that had happened. Then everybody's dancing. They got some guy named Stanford Steve out there. And I'm like, okay, this is not the SportsCenter I remember. And I grabbed Twitter and say, you know, it's a shame that SportsCenter doesn't have 30 for 30 sensibilities anymore, and we can't stick to what is good. And I guess I made the mistake of putting S, whatever his thing is, on there, because I feel like I have to be transparent. He fires back, this guy beats women. I'm like, okay, that's pretty sophomoric. All I'm doing is saying this stopped with the strobe lights and the dancing, and he fires back with that. Not very professional on his part. And I left it alone for a while, but then I kept seeing SportsCenter deteriorate, and I'm not alone in that boat. And it's probably dead because they haven't stuck to some of the old principles while trying to progress. I understand that. But I think they've got the wrong people doing the shows. It's just my one man's opinion. Can't believe that he continues to respond that way. And finally, at one point, I said, look, man, you're out of control. And it's to the point now where I've got a lawyer who wants to sue you for your tweet last year, which is reckless and inaccurate. And then he stopped. From that point on, nothing. And then I kind of realized these things are so dumb. It ends up somebody writing about it. But all I'm doing is I'm a guy who pays $7.50 a month for ESPN. I don't like SportsCenter, and I tweet it. That's essentially what that was. I don't think I should be subjected to one of their hosts calling me names. So that's what happened. I think they probably put an end to it, and I think it's absolutely ridiculous that I'm sorry I even got involved in that.
Well, obviously, you're not a fan of SportsCenter and the way it's changed. What about the rest of ESPN's state of TV programming?
It's not as spicy. Mark Shapiro, who predated Skipper there, took chances. And it was Mark who started, pardon the interruption, it was Mark who started Around the Horn. And Jim Cohen wasn't the current people there. They inherited it. So I think some of these sports media critics, I read them, and I love Eric Rideholm, and he's very talented, but the Eric Rideholm created Around the Horn, no. That was Shapiro, who rocked and rolled and created the ESPN that soared to its highest levels. And, you know, Shapiro kind of got run out of there, and when I had a meeting with Skipper once, he told me, you know, you were one of Shapiro's guys, if I was some leper or something. I also got you 950,000 viewers a day when Around the Horn's now down to about 400. So I was doing something right on those shows. They think their problem is we need to relate to millennials. No, I think that's a mistake. I think millennials, if you look at the numbers as I have, it's something around the neighborhood of 30% of male millennials post-college have to go back and live at home. So you're not dealing with people with disposable income. I think it's a mistake to have Van Pelt or Butchie Gross look into that camera and say, I got to think about the guy in the frat house. That guy doesn't have any money. Don't forget those of us in our 30s and 40s and 50s who have disposable income, care deeply about sports, have watched ESPN through the years, and want some of those staples done in a mature, professional, sophisticated way. You can have your fun. Certainly Patrick and Overman had their fun, but they knew when to have it, and they never veered away from what was most important, the daily digest of sports. Yeah, I don't want to see highlights from the Mariners-Angels game. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But with ESPN's resources and their access to so many people in sports, I would love to see more interviews. When Scott does them, they're mushy, they're softballs. Oh, it's great to have you here. No, I really want you to do great interviews. ESPN should be able to command the best sports interviewer in the business. I don't know where that person is, but go hire them. But Jason, the problem now is they're losing their audience, their subscribers. They're desperate for the first time. They don't know what to do. Tell you what, 30 for 30, they should start a 30 for 30 channel. It is that good. It continues to be great. I would emphasize storytelling, and that goes for SportsCenter as well. And it doesn't have to be a mushy report of the day's news. It can simply be a definitive, at times hard-hitting look at sports. Instead, I'm getting a lot of mush and dancing, and I resent it. And I think that's one of the reasons that they are falling apart, because there is no real reason to watch them anymore. I think the Stephen A. Max show is excellent. The reason they love it so much is because it's on at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they're getting ratings at a time when they never thought they'd get them. But there are people out there, Jason, who don't like it. And now when the real important grist for embracing debate is Trump, it's hard for even me to sit there and watch Max and Stephen A. debate about whether the Steelers are going to be any good this year when I can go down the dial and see five different channels doing Trump. And I'm honestly more interested in that than Stephen A. and Max.
Which is why Fox Sports 1 arrives on the scene. They're trying to provide an alternative, try to challenge ESPN. Some will say they were very bold and overpromising, yet they've been under-delivering. They've also made the conscious choice to eliminate content on their website from a writing standpoint in favor of video, which created quite the stir. When you look from your vantage point at what Fox Sports 1 has done and how they've competed against ESPN the past few years, what's your assessment on them?
I think their programming is good. I think there is a general issue with finding them to this day. They have not done an effective enough job of teaching people how to find them on their receiver. I think that's their problem. I know where ESPN is. It's 206 on DirecTV. I know where it is on my Spectrum in L.A. I don't think people generally know that because they're still a relatively new network. But if I were running Fox Sports, I think I would have done a blowout campaign having a lot of fun with how do you find us on your television? And that's their problem. Bayless, I used to compete against Skip in Chicago. I never would have dreamed he would reach this level of having this kind of influence, but he has it. It's a big star. People will tune in, but they're only getting about 100,000 a day the last I looked. The show in the afternoon towered in Whitlock. They're in the 40s. That's not going to fly. They're not going to last, and I think that's an identity issue. It's a shame because I think ESPN is vulnerable. I think a show such as Around the Horn is kind of boring right now. I think they have provocative people. They've hired the right people. But the problem is if you can't find them, and we're in a Trump era anyway, it's not a recipe for Fox Sports 1 to last with these shows. That could end up becoming a lot of tractor pulls and things like that.
You mentioned earlier the podcast, and you're doing the Unmuted podcast. You were reunited for a while with Woody Page. As you look at where audio is going, is that an area you plan to stay active in, and what makes it appealing to you?
I think it's the best opportunity for a guy like me to be heard by people and to hear the real me. I don't think there's any better forum than audio to hear the actual person and to find out about who they are. It's hard to do that in 800 words in the paper. It's hard to do that on Around the Horn when you've got 12 seconds before he mutes you. But on the radio or on a podcast, I think people get to know you. And I think that's one of the reasons in Chicago when I was hired and I took over just a dead show, dead time slot. I started hearing, wow, we're getting to hear your favorite pizza joint in Chicago. And Silverman and I would have debates about the best pizza in Chicago and the lines would line up. And things like that, people, you become part of their family every day. And I enjoy it, but it's always been a third-rung thing for me because I've got a full-blown column job that takes me around the world and I'm traveling like nobody else in the business. I'm writing 5 and 6 days a week, and then I got to do Around the Horn 5 days a week. So radio is always sort of the third-rung thing, but I've realized now I've done so much in this industry. I'm really enjoying this, Jason, because it's a chance to create my own thing, be my own boss, talk about whatever I want without any political ramifications. If I want to talk about the White Sox or the Bulls, I don't. But if I do, I'm not going to have somebody coming in with a lawyer after me. I'm not going to have publishers who end up in prison, which happens sometimes. I do my own thing. I have got a great producer in Chris Morales. It's easy to do. I'm having fun with the production part. I've never done production before. To me, I think we have to be more versatile and well-schooled across the board than ever. And I have a hoop doing this. It's just me. Woody and I were doing it. Woody's pretty stretched out, pretty thin. And we just decided, hey, man, stay healthy, stay good. And, you know, maybe someday we'll do it again. But I'm just doing it alone. And what I basically do, I don't think anybody else in the industry does this. It's a daily 30-minute opinionated wrap-up of what's happening today. It's up in the early afternoon, posted, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it because I have freedom, I guess, to do what I want, to insert this, to not worry about a printing press downstairs, to not worry about a headline writer screwing up the headline. It's simply me, Chris, in the podcasting networks like Apple and Google and so forth. And I'm having as much fun as I've ever had. It's such a grind, this industry. And I, time to time, I see old colleagues and they say, you're looking good. I said, yeah, because when I was doing 3 jobs, I never had a chance to sleep or eat right. And I looked terrible. Now I'm in great shape. I work out every day and I do this podcast, and there's something to be said for your mind being very, very healthy and not too occupied to do your best work. I think some of what I'm doing on here right now is my best work, because I can write and broadcast, and it can be very timely each day.
Anyone who's been listening to you talk for the last 45 minutes can tell that you've got a passion for the Donald Trump stuff and politics. How much interest have you had in making a switch outside of sports, possibly entering the political talk arena?
No, because it's a clown show. You know, as critical as I am of some of the people in sports media, it's painful to see some people on that side of it. And no, I think this is my area of expertise. Jason, every now and then you'd see political columnists come over to sports,
right,
try to write sports. New York Times right now has a couple, and I cringe sometimes. They're not really immersed in this. It'd be like, I would be out of place. I don't want to do that. What I do think we can do, though, here is, without me doing Trump talk, certainly the various issues of the day, Kaepernick, the various protests we're seeing. I love what Derek Carr and Khalil Mack did the other night. That was not grounded in anger. That was grounded in love and respect. That was a great topic for me today, that this is the way we could be doing these protests without there being such strife and anger. I want to see Marshawn Lynch speak about it at some point. But no, I don't want to veer off into that. But I do enough of it on here where I think people know where I'm coming from. And I don't think it's my place on a podcast such as this to rant and rail on Trump or defend Trump or anything. I'm kind of right down the middle on this, on the air. I don't think anybody can tell who I'm for or who I'm against. But what I do know is I'd be a fool not to do a segment on Kevin Durant blowing off the White House with the Warriors, and why Belichick and Kraft and Brady, oh yeah, they're all in. Of course I have to do that. These are the times we live in, and that's part of the connection that people now have with sports when they are consuming media. So, no, I don't ever want to go in that direction. And I think at some point, like everything else, we'll head into another cycle. It may be a while, but we'll head into another cycle. At this point, I still love trying to lead with the Dodgers. It's one of the greatest teams I've ever seen. It's a thrill to watch them in L.A., but it inevitably gets knocked off by somebody railing on Trump or doing a protest, and that's fine. I have always been adaptable to the story. The story is most important. But some days, Jason, I'd tell you, I miss like actually talking about a game. those days may be over, but I'm trying my best to serve the total audience.
Yeah, we pay a lot more attention these days to what happens outside the lines than inside the lines, that's for sure. I do want to ask you about one Donald Trump thing, though, because I think it relates to the media business and the way we work. Many across the nation have problems with him tweeting. He counters by saying, hey, I can't get a fair shake from the press, so the only way to control the message is to deliver it myself. Do you think, as an outside observer, is he making a wise or poor choice by taking that position?
He should go directly to the public. I don't blame him for waking up every day and being slaughtered every day. I don't blame him for wanting to go directly to the people. I wish he would do it in a more professional, orderly way. Maybe, you know, have his people each day at 5 o'clock Eastern. President Trump will have his Twitter presentation. And even if it's done on audio, you know, have a moderator with Trump, and he can, you know, whatever he wants to do. I don't blame him for wanting to deliver his message directly. You can do that in this day and age. I love doing it. I've just explained to you why I love podcasts. I don't have to worry about lawyers marching and some sports owners sending it after me. Same with Trump, but it's just the way he does it. 4:30 in the morning. Some of his stuff misspelled. Nobody's editing it. He comes off like a doofus when he could come off like the most aware social media president we've seen. The last president was socially aware with social media, and he handled it well. Trump just comes off as he does in real life, like this reckless, you know, doofus. And that's the problem I have. He's ruining an opportunity to do it right with Twitter. And evidently he's not listening to anybody because he fires somebody, you know, once a week.
I've been told, Jay, one of the reasons you were so great as a columnist is because you didn't let people influence you. You didn't let a lot of them into your inner circle, which allowed you to be objective and serve the reader. That being said, Some will say that that could have worked against you the last few years when you're trying to regain bigger opportunities, because if you're hard to get on the inner side with, it makes it tougher for people to have that relationship to throw you a life preserver when you need one. Well, how would you assess that?
You said earlier, well, geez, this guy had an open door to Michael Jordan. Well, why is that? You know, I ripped Michael Jordan for gambling in the 90s. I've ripped him for other things. And he carries on a relationship, because when I would see Jordan, you know, he'd probably yell at me for whatever I had just written. But it's not like some of these athletes do in a locker room to impress their pals in the locker room. It's just Michael and me in a parking lot. And I think there was a mutual respect, because then after that, he'd give me a great column for the next 20 minutes and nobody else would have it. So I'm not a pack guy. There seems to be more of that than ever, you know, traveling around in packs. Everybody has the same information, aggregate. You know, I'm appalled when I don't see any competition out there. Bleacher Report takes this from SB Nation. Thanks. Hat tip to SB Nation and USA Today for taking that. We took this from you. Is that all these people are doing, sitting in the office and looking for stories in other sites? We're not compete against those sites. What happened to that? Well, evidently, we're in an age now, and again, I'm going right to the top, to the people who run networks, run stations, run newspapers, run websites. You know, they're in it for the money, Jason. And if your columnist is crossing a money person in a town like Chicago, where there's a lot of old school money still running at Terry Reinstor, it's very easy for Reinstor to pick up the phone and say, hey, look, you know, remember that dinner I was going to go to with you? If you don't get rid of that clown, we're not going to associate with you anymore. That is still always going to be my problem, that I'm going to be that kamikaze pilot who goes out every day trying to do his best and not let anybody get in the way of what I believe is the proper piece. I'm going to certainly research it. I'm going to report the hell out of it. I'm going to come up with a fair and firm conclusion. But a lot of people are threatened by that, because I think publishers, editors, station, program directors, general managers, they want to control their talent. And I guess what I would say to that was, when I was talking to them at ESPN in LA in 2010, and we're having this big huddle with all the top people there, I remember telling a couple of them, guys, all you got to do is come to me. If USC has a problem with me, instead of turning it into a silent war like I had with Jim Pastor in Chicago, why don't we have a meeting? Jay, what's this about today? I don't think they've renovated the Coliseum well enough for the money. Okay, can I put you in touch with so-and-so over there? Yeah, sure. And then maybe we come to an agreement. Or maybe at some point my boss, and I recognize he is my boss, is, I don't want you going there today because I don't think you know enough about the topic. You know what I'd say, Jason? Okay, I respect that. I need a relationship with that person. I need mutual respect. And sometimes, why do you think I was at the Chicago Sun-Times for 17 years? Because I had an editor, sports editor there for most of those years who I had a great relationship with. Why do you think I was in around the horn for 8 years every day? Because every morning you'd have these terrific people, Bill Wolf, now who's doing Mike Greenberg's show when it starts on ESPN, Rideholm, Solomon. We had terrific everyday relationships, hundreds and hundreds of shows. That adds up for credibility. And when you're a multimedia guy, I tell kids all the time when I'm speaking to classes that you have to try to master audio and video and write well. And I think that's what I've done throughout my career.
You mentioned being with the Sun-Times for 17 years, 8 years at Around the Horn. So clearly you wouldn't be there if you didn't have relationships behind the scenes, as you alluded to. If a hiring manager is listening to this right now, what's one final message you want to leave them with?
There's nothing more I'd love in life to have a cool relationship with a successful manager who thinks big and is willing to take on a guy who always produces numbers everywhere he's been, on every platform. And I might be a little strong-minded, but tell me one guy out there, Howard Stern, Mike Francesa, some of the very best who've ever done this, who isn't strong-minded. Isn't that what you would want in your host? You want a pushover when somebody's trying to come in? And my God, if somebody tried to come into Mike Francesa's office and say, Mike, sign this, you can't rip the Mets or the Knicks, Mike Francesa would turn around and do an entire show on it. So would Stern. So would anybody else. Me, I get run out of ESPN Radio in Chicago. So maybe I just didn't have the proper backbone behind me. I didn't have the right lawyer or the right agent or whatever. But the fact is, I've really, compared to some of the greats in the industry, I'm really kind of the nice guy who loves the business and knows exactly how to succeed in it. And I would urge people to ignore the crap on the internet. It is the internet. And how about coming straight to the source? We could have a great chat.
He is Jay Mariotti. You can hear his unmuted podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. He's also on Twitter at Mariotti Sports, although he says he doesn't use it that often. So take that into account. Jay, I appreciate the time. This was very interesting, and I wish you all the best in the future.
Well, I thank you for the forum. I enjoy what you're doing, too. I have some problems with some of the sports media critics, but I do think you're a fair guy, and I appreciate the time.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
As you can tell, Jay has no issue sharing his thoughts, whether it was the topic of ESPN, FS1, Scott Van Pelt, his domestic issue and court case, or Donald Trump. Jay fires away, and some of you will appreciate that. Others will be annoyed, but either way, I thought it was thought-provoking. But that's all the time we have for this week. A reminder, my living is made by helping companies and individuals as a sports radio consultant. To find out how I can help your brand, email me, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. In the words of Kid Rock, if it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it looks good, you'll see it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.